Thank you so much, Bill and Zoe, for your participation in the service today, and great to see other members of your family. It's wonderful to have this celebration be something for our church family, for biological families, for all the ways that God brings family together. Choir, great job. It had a nice little groove to the anthem this morning. I am not going to be able to follow that up. I'm not very groovy, but I'll try not to be too insufferable. I know. So as we've been getting ready to celebrate Robin's ordination over recent weeks and talking about it, I've been highlighting how we can especially see this time together and this opportunity to lift up Robin as a sign of health in our overall community. We've talked about how healthy church communities do a few unique things in organizations and institutions overall, right? We look to be able to do baptisms together, where we are closely connecting and rooting people in God and in that vital relationship. We welcome new members because we're showing how people are committing to each other and to also God's vision for the church at large and for one particular local body. We do care and outreach together to show that in following God, we are connecting more broadly and deepening our connections with each other, and specifically in a way that affirms different people's experiences and different people's identities, because we're not only looking inside those who we already know and are comfortable with, but are connecting with those around us, and also that we are willing to walk alongside people who may be going through a difficult season. And then ultimately, churches that are healthy also are able to do ordinations, because that is an opportunity to recognize God's call on people's lives and then help in supporting to develop their gifts and give outlets for leadership. And those are all wonderful things that we've been able to participate in together as a church community because of the ways that all of you are faithful in supporting each other and in following God. And it's exciting to have one more expression of that today. I'm very thankful to God and to all of you that these things have been happening for us in recent years. Ultimately, though, I want us to remember that these are the fruit or the outcomes of healthy community. They aren't necessarily the foundational characteristics that all of this is built on. And so when we have days like today, we're affirming not only our chance to say that healthy community happens through those particular expressions, but that also those foundational characteristics are present, and we want to celebrate that. We want to keep committing ourselves to aspire to live out those traits together and then to participate in God's healthy salvation life that happens for us as individuals and also for local church communities. Our verses today give us some really powerful examples of how healthy community is formed and then sustained, and how that goes back all the way throughout centuries of God's people and their traditions. And so as we ordain Robin today, we are getting to affirm that she holds these characteristics in herself and that she is helping to lead us in ministry in them together. We celebrate all of the ways that we're able to experience and share in these characteristics of healthy community. And we do this with her as our community chaplain that we're celebrating. So I want us to reflect as we go into this time on a few of those key things that are present in both of the verses and that we can see present in our community and in Robin as she does her ministry together with all of us. First, we should remember that healthy community happens when people form a common cause amongst a whole range of different life experiences. We see this very foundationally just in who the people are in our verses today. Ruth is a Moabite from a different country and different lineage than Naomi as a Jew. However, they were able to have this relationship that they felt and bonded together, ended up transcending just the circumstances of, oh, we're moving back and forth where there happens to be food or a famine. Or we had a sort of marriage contractual relationship that bonded our family together, but that's sort of as far as it goes. We see in the bond that they have, the way that they reach out to each other, the desire that they have to find the right solutions that is ultimately going to be healthiest for each of them, even if there's a question of both, do we end up having a way of seeking each other's best by staying completely together, or are we even willing to let someone go and seek what is best for them, even if it is apart from me? That spirit, that heart, that desire to see another person thrive, regardless of whether that necessarily always brings the absolute peak best outcomes for you, is a wonderful expression of relationship and community that has been founded beyond circumstance. And when we meet Tabitha or Dorcas, depending on what name that you use in our Acts reading today, I think the fact that those two names are shown as both being remembered for this woman is more important than we might realize. The fact that she would have both an Aramaic and a Greek name that were worth writing down to be held onto for posterity for who knows how long in the future when it was written down shows that she would have been remembered as a key bridge in these early church communities that were still learning and stumbling around between what is it like? We've got people who are responding to God and following God from Judaic culture, from Greek or Gentile cultures, from all over the empire. And we're still learning how to come together. And somehow Tabitha or Dorcas seemed to be someone who must have been right at the center of that, to be able to bring that bond between people who were in many ways very different, but were finding this way that God was calling them together. I remember when I was in college, I had a friend of mine who played club lacrosse at the school and played it all growing up. And then he also worked as a volunteer at a preschool that was local there in Tallahassee. And all of his lacrosse buddies had a nickname for him. They never used his name. They called him Blade, right? It sounds like good and tough, like a lacrosse guy, something with like the stick and the way he'd slash people and stuff. So everyone from his lacrosse life called him Blade. And then I went and volunteered with him one time at the preschool. And all the kids there called him Mr. Jeffrey. Mr. Jeffrey, come play with me. Mr. Jeffrey, come read me a book. Mr. Jeffrey, I'm ready to do some art. And to me, like those two differences really said something about how he was able to carry an identity and make a bond with people in very different circumstances. And I don't know if he ever did, but I guarantee you that he probably had the cred to get some of those other lacrosse bros to come and hang out with some little kids. And so Blade and Mr. Jeffrey could probably find a bond, and he would be the reason that all of them would be able to connect. And so it's that same type of spirit that carries through. And we know that Robin carries through that same spirit for us as well, that there are all sorts of people that we are able to connect with as a community through all sorts of different life circumstances, especially because she is able to bond all those people together in the way that she cares for them and wants to walk alongside of them as a companion. She's central to our goodwill partnership for everyone that comes on Thursdays, to our prayer group teams at our assisted living facilities around the community. She participates in our outreach and arch in the garden, and all of those things are able to have a sense of common identity that much more because she is helpful at the center of those and guides them so well. And most important, we know that she doesn't just do this on her own, saying, oh yeah, hi, I'm connected to the church and I'm Robin and I do all the things. She's amazing at bridging us together and navigating even the things that are difficult. If any of us feel like, it might be hard to connect with Goodwill folks. I don't know for sure what it's like to be able to go to the prayer group at an assisted living. We know if Robin's along with us that she will help us feel capable and supported and comfortable and like we can do it. And having her there with us will make it that much less intimidating, even if we can acknowledge that they're not easy. And that's an amazing role that she plays in our community. Second, we should remember that healthy communities are willing to process through especially difficult, painful things. On the one hand, it might be a challenge of connecting with someone who is a little bit different, like we just talked about it, but there can be even more difficult and challenging things. And we go all the way through them. Healthy communities don't avoid them. They don't pretend that everything's okay. They don't project shame on other people because challenges are happening. We also don't catastrophize that there's nothing good that can happen in the midst of struggle. But ultimately, we find that meaning. We go through it together, whatever that painful thing may be. We don't rush to the end. We find actual healing, actual resolution, actual reconciliation. Ruth and Naomi find this strength in each other. Even though they're going through so much loss of family members, so much risk of traveling and of the famine, rather than giving up or blaming each other, thinking somehow like they've been cursed to each other, they instead remind each other that they can find strength together, that they can find a path forward together, and that God will come and bond them together and support each other. And ultimately, Their willingness to struggle through this and to continue to follow God's values means that they bring other people along in following God's values in difficult times too, and invoking the kinsman protection from Boaz and assuring that there is gleaning not only for themselves but for others in the rest of the story. Tabitha also, I think, clearly had a role in forming a close, healthy community who knew what you're supposed to do when things get bad and how they support each other. When she died, she wasn't there to lead them through that, but we see them all rallying together. We see them taking care of each other. We see them even inviting people who were loosely connected to the church, like Peter or those traveling with him. They weren't afraid to say, oh, we shouldn't bother Peter with this. Oh, Peter's probably got more important things to do. Oh, Peter and his friends may feel like our pain is too inconvenient or awkward for them. That they knew how to bring people along with them. They knew how to walk with each other in whatever would be. And they knew how to have that hope that God would continue to bring new life, whatever that may look like. And I think many of us have similarly experienced deep and significant impact from Robin's support in all sorts of circumstances for our own lives. How she's come alongside us in a number of circumstances that many of us may be dealing with, including some very challenging and painful ones for some of us. And that she's helped us to make sure not just to hide, to avoid, to rush through, but to look at whatever it is that we're dealing with, bring it to God, and have God help us take all the way through it. And even though different outcomes may come as a result, some that may seem obviously positive, some that may feel like we don't know still exactly what is going to come of it, but we know that we still have a hope and a joy that are deep enough to take us through any feeling, any outcome, and are even more than just happiness or convenience that we might look for, but that through her we have a way to process all the way through. And when we have people that help us as a community do those things that are especially difficult, right? That's the stuff that as a community, it takes a little bit to get to. It takes some awkwardness. It takes some worry. It takes some concern. It takes some trust and safety to know that you can do that with each other. But when we can find the ability to do that, to go through those challenging spaces and seasons, when we find people that help us do that for ourselves, that we feel safe with, that help gather other people around to be our safety net as well, then that means that healthy communities are able to respond to God's movement so that we can take that whole range of people that we started with and that whole range of circumstances, and God bonds that together into a new shared identity. And that shared group is one that's marked by experiencing salvation life together. Ruth and Naomi built this whole new life together as they walked through their challenges and risk. And as I said, they brought out values not only for themselves, but for others. And so they bonded a community around them in their own willingness to risk and to support each other and to seek other support. And ultimately, that willingness to walk that way led to the whole Davidic dynasty. Ruth was David's great, great, great grandmother. And that led to even all the way to Jesus and the church today. Similarly, we can see that there is a great miracle of hope in the raising of Dorcas or Tabitha, but that's not the only miracle that we can see looking at that story. We shouldn't miss all the things that her community was doing in supporting people who were poor and having trouble getting life to go through just from day to day and feeling insecure, and it might be food or livelihood or a place to stay. That the passage mentions that she and her community were at the center of caring for people that way. And they were also ready to care for each other in times of mourning. Those on their own are miracles. We know how lonely and how desperate those circumstances can feel when we don't have people willing to come alongside us. And she helped form a community that was ready to always step into those gaps. And it is amazing and important that it wasn't just dependent on, well, we need Dorcas to be back because otherwise we don't know how to do any of this. Dorcas had helped support folks so that they knew what to do in the spirit of Dorcas, whether she was there or not. And ultimately, we know that she would die again, but I imagine that her community was able to sustain itself even past whatever that next step would be. And again, Robin is central to helping us share in exactly these same types of relationships and ministries and life experiences together. It's part of what we're affirming in her ordination. It's part of what we celebrate and what we're able to do and what she has helped us become capable of doing in our partnership. She does it not only as just ministry tasks that she's assigned, but she has done it fully formed as a member together in our community, and then therefore helping all of us be fully formed deeply and broadly together at the same time. She's done that following her call from God. She's been committed to working continuously and developing those traits further in herself and to work with us to draw them out of each of us in our community as well. And so that is a great thing to celebrate, and that is the big thing that we are ultimately ordaining. And so I want to invite Robin to be able to come up and talk about what those things mean to her, what those connections with all of us mean to her, and how she will continue to operate in her call and in our community as we go forward with her ordination.
So a couple of nights ago, Bill and I were watching The Voice. We'd taped it, and a pair came on to compete against one another. And the first one was so good. And the second one was pretty good, too. But the first one was so good that Bill looked at me after the second one was done. He said, "The second one deserves to be saved just because she followed up so well after the first one." So I hope somebody out there has a save button for me. And now is the time to hit it, if you do. So I'm going to, about 2 years ago, after I first came on board, Donna said to me, I hope I see you do more, you know, winging it. Well, here's your moment, Donna. Okay? I have something prepared. But with Rob out, I think I duplicated a little bit of what Rob said. So we're going to skip over some stuff here. We're going to see how this goes, okay? So I'm going to start out with a little story that I've been hearing a lot. As you all know, I've been taking some classes to become a spiritual director. And so this is a story that's been shared in my class a couple of times, and I want to share it with all of you. So Kisa Gotomi was the wife of a wealthy man. Her story is one of the most famous in Buddhism. After losing her only child, Kisa Gotomi became desperate and began to ask for help from others. In her pain and desperation, she began to go from person to person begging for her help. Her sorrow was so great that many thought she had lost her mind. Finally, an old man told her to see the Buddha. The Buddha told her that he could bring the child back to life if she could find white mustard seeds from a family where no one had died. Again, she went desperately from house to house, but to her disappointment, she could not find a house that had not suffered the death of a family member. Finally, the realization struck her that there is no house free from the sting or pain or suffering of death. She returned to Buddha, who comforted her and began to teach her the truths and wisdom that lead to enlightenment. Kisa Gotomi was awakened and became Buddha's best student. So for any of us who have suffered great loss, we realize that there are many ways in which one may lose something that they value and hold dear. Death is only one of those ways. We may lose our jobs. Someone we love may become sick or suffer injury or become disabled. We may lose our home or become financially ruined. A dear friend may move away. We may have an argument with someone we love. Our spouse may ask for a divorce. We may be dealing with addictions within our family. We may be abused, abandoned, or both. We may lose a pet who is like a child to us. And this list can go on and on, but each of these situations may cause us to grieve and mourn. Nigerian writer Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and I deserve an award for just saying that name, really, had she lost her father during the beginning of the pandemic and writes this about mourning. Grief is a cruel kind of education. You learn how ungentle mourning can be, how full of anger. You learn how glib condolences can feel. You learn how much grief is about language, the failure of language, and the grasping for language. She writes, "Why are my sides so sore and achy? It's from crying. For weeks, my stomach is in turmoil, tense and tight with foreboding, the ever-present certainty that somebody else will die, that more will be lost." One of my friends this week shared in our time together in a group that when she was younger, she had gone through a very dark time. And her children went to school one morning, and she went into the bathroom, and she closed the door behind her, and she screamed at God. Another friend spoke up and said, "Hey, I did that too. My husband passed away last year, and I did the same thing, except I didn't bother with the bathroom." And I thought to myself, I know what she feels like, because I did that too when I went through my own dark night of the soul. And I screamed and yelled and had it out with God a couple of times. And so I'm sure many of you know what that feels like. Maybe you've had it out with God. Maybe, just like my friends, you yelled at him. Maybe you joined the psalmist and shouted, "How can you sit there and do nothing?" to God. In your lamenting, maybe you pounded your fists. The book of Psalms and Lamentations honor these prayers that spill out from deep within our pain as sacred and divine prayer. And for those of you who see weeping and crying, pain and suffering as a sign of weakness, trust that God sees it differently. Jesus calls it weeping as a blessed state. But why, when pain and suffering impact each of our lives in different ways that leave us numb and lost and alone in a world that seems so disconnected, why would they consider that a blessing? First, let me assure you that it is not because God sends us trials and tribulations to test us, nor does God see this as a way of strengthening us. God does know, though, that in a world that is broken, no one can escape the pain that is all around us, and it happens to us whether it's intended or not. We feel it. God wants to be right there in it with us because God is the God of restoration, and because God knows that our pain can be transformed and give birth to something new. So when we were getting ready to do this sermon, and I was looking around for some verses that would talk to us about what community is and help to inform us about what community chaplaincy might look like, Dorcas would not leave me alone. She just kept waving her arms at me and telling me I had to talk about her. So here we are talking about her. And I got to thinking, how do I know? Because Dorcas' story is only 6 verses long. So how do I know that she's in community? How do I know that these women really feel this way about her, that they see themselves as a community? So I did the same thing all of you would do, and I Googled it. I got out the computer, and I was like, how do I build a community? And surprisingly enough, I really thought I would get back this ridiculous, irrelevant answer. But surprisingly enough, and thanks to the fact that most of us are using social media to market these days, there's a whole lot out there about how to build a community around your product and service. So I read a couple of those articles, and I come up with 5 steps. Shared identity, which Rob's already talked about, so check. We can see that they have a shared identity. Second of all, we gain their trust. So we know Dorcas made clothing for the women. So I'm guessing that was an obvious need that they had, and she was able to provide for it. She was probably, we're guessing, professors and researchers believe that Dorcas was probably a Roman citizen, and as a Roman citizen, she would have been allowed to inherit money or property from her husband. And so with inheriting that property and money from her husband, she would have been in a state where she could actually lend support to people she felt compassion towards. And we're thinking that maybe she was a widow as well, because she probably had a soft spot for widows. But we're thinking that the other women who are in this community they weren't Roman citizens, so therefore they didn't have access to it. And Roman law doesn't allow for property to be passed on to women if they're not Roman citizens. They were subject to local law, which would not have allowed for it. So she probably gained their trust by giving them aid and support. She probably talked to them, as all of us would do if we were handing off something to them. We would listen to their stories. It's what we do every week, right? At Taylor Springs, we listen to their stories. And so she probably gained their trust, and then they began to trust one another and built that up in that way. So check, that one's taken care of. Then she gave them an opportunity to participate. I'm guessing that everybody has a gift, everybody has a skill, and she invited them to participate in that by sharing the gifts and skills that they had. And so check, they could participate. That was our third thing that we had to do, is give them opportunity to participate. Fourth is you have to reward participation. Well, in my book, clothing, food, shelter, those are basic necessities. They don't sound like rewards, but I'm thinking to people who don't have them, that's pretty good incentive. So I'm thinking that was their reward. So check, we got that one too. The fifth one is repeat. So check. She got the first one, and there was more than one woman there mourning her, so I'm thinking she must have accrued some other people along the way. So she repeated steps 1 through 4 over and over and over and over again. And I think that the book of Ruth gives us an opportunity to see all of this done in great detail, and I'm not going to go through it because I think that Pastor Rob did a really great job of going through it, and I would just be repeating some of the things, so I don't want to do that to you. I'm super hungry, and the food smells really good. So, yeah. So we're going to skip over that. I think that you can see, though, how Ruth and Naomi had a shared identity, both widows. They ended up trusting each other. They participated. Naomi comes up with this awesome plan about how to get Boaz to support them and to redeem them. And because they were stuck together, he redeemed both of them, not just Ruth, but both of them. And then they just repeated it over and over and over again once they added Boaz to the team. So we got that part covered. That's all there. And Ruth ends up being my favorite story ever because of all of that, because she just shows this immense capacity to love and to be open to new things that I would be afraid to do. And she shows us how to bring about community, how to involve others in community, and how to involve others in the knowledge that God is here for us and that we are here for each other as a result of that. So I've just thrown a bunch of stuff at you about grief and lamenting and building community and more. But all I really want to leave you with today is, and maybe I'll double back to the rest of the stuff later, but today all we're worried about is the importance of sharing identity in the building of community, because this is how it all gets started. And we've been wrestling with this idea, like I said, of community chaplaincy. And what is it? And what does it mean? And how do and where do we begin? So I think if I'm doing my processing correctly here, we're in step 5. We have a shared identity. And you all invited me into it. And we have trust in one another. You all show up every time somebody's sick, somebody passes away, somebody needs something, somebody wants to celebrate something. You all are here. And Arlene even said to me today, I dressed up for you. So you even get dressed for the occasions, too. So I think we have trust. We have lots of opportunity to participate in all of those things. And we've done this. We've done it before. We've done it before. You did it for me as I came in. You did it for each other as you added new people to the congregation and to your partnerships. And so now the work that we engage in as choir members, as people who are teaching Sunday school, as the people who take care of the lawn and the building and the courtyard, as people who are taking care of the car show or the Easter egg hunts or the trick-or-treat events, all of the work that we're doing together, we're sharing in together, and it's just teaching us how to continue to build those teams and how to build that community. So we've already begun this work of repeating over and over and over again. And we can definitely see the repeat when we look at the Hope Letter Writers, when we look at the Goodwill Thursday people, when we look at the Daily Bread and Produce Ministries, and when we look at the Homebound Ministries team. And what sets those not apart, but makes them just slightly different from the work we're doing in other places, is that that work is being done out there, not in here. So we're already hitting repeat and growing us. We're already hitting repeat and growing our partnerships. And so you are already an Easter people, living in the assurances that God is with us in all things and doing the work of Christmas throughout the year. And so that reminds me that back in December, I promised I would share with you my favorite of Howard Thurman's poems. And it's short, so I'm going to take the time to do it here now, because I think it serves a purpose here now at this point. And it's kind of what informs this next part for me. Once I heard it, I knew I'd never be able to let it go, and it would inform everything I did from that moment on. It's called The Work of Christmas. When the song of the angels is stilled, when the star in the sky is gone, when the king and princes are home, when the shepherds are back with their flock, the work of Christmas begins. To find the lost, to heal the broken, to feed the hungry, to release the prisoner, to rebuild the nations, to build peace among others, and to make music in the heart. So when I hear this, it encourages me to push forward, to take the next steps. The only step left, as I've said, is step 5. We just got to do it over and over and over again, adding more people into our partnerships and community. But I will offer you one last story, it's brief, about how we might see the work still left to do. I openly admit I'm not a big basketball fan, but I do think we have something to learn from the Boston Celtics 2000 team. And their story illustrates this one final lesson well. In the 2006-2007 season, the Boston Celtics team finished last place in the East. Their record was 24-59, and fans had begun to chant, "Fire Doc." They were referring to head coach Doc Rivers, who had been hired 3 years prior to bring the team back after Larry Bird retired and they began their downward spiral. But he had not yet succeeded, and he knew something different had to be done if he was going to turn this team around. Rivers did acquire some new promising players, but managing 3-star players was a difficult feat even for any manager, so winning was not a guarantee with 3 new players. He learned about the word Ubuntu, and he began to examine and strategize how he could bring the word down in such a way that it would be applied to all areas of the team. Ubuntu is a Zulu word, an abbreviation of the phrase, and it means humanity, or it's most often translated as humanity, but it's an abbreviation for a whole phrase. And in the essence of time, the desire to keep time, we're not even going to try to go through that phrase, but that phrase does translate to a person can only be a person through others. Nelson Mandela, in his fight against apartheid, had popularized the phrase and would agree that it is a worthy interpretation to also say, if you're not happy, I'm not happy. The Boston Celtics came to know it as, I can be better only if you are better. Implementing Ubuntu as a shared idea across the board in all areas allowed them to truly become a team and to close the season with the best record in the league with 66 wins. They headed into the playoffs for the first time in 31 years. Because they made the choice to put the rest of the team ahead of themselves as individuals. Also, for the first time in 31 years, they had a shared identity. Taking the shot now literally meant that it had to be about not what was best for them, not what was best for their record, not what was best for their career, but what was best for the team. They had to refuse to leave the others behind. Ubuntu not only carried them into the playoffs, but it allowed them to win the championship against the LA Lakers, and Ubuntu was their rallying cry because it was their shared identity. Ubuntu is the epitome of companioning. It is everything Ruth teaches us about sticking together. Ubuntu has to be our cry out there. We have to refuse to leave anyone behind. And in the same way, we try not to leave anyone behind in here. Now, we can't save everyone, and we can't do that all at once. And I'm not asking you to be God. God knows we can't do that. That's why he calls all of us to be in relationship. The work is just too great to not be shared in. Don't forget the cross. We are called in relationship vertically with God, but we are also called into relationship horizontally with all others. So it's sharing in the work out there where we can live out our call to be in relationship with others and join in the work of restoration. God is with us in all things. Everyone suffers. Its insidiousness touches all of us. So the next time you find Kiza Gautami wandering door to door in her desperate search, help her. Lament with her. It's sacred prayer when you do that. Stick with them for a short time. Just the way Ruth stuck with Naomi in her suffering. Remember, you are building community and transforming suffering. Before I go this morning, I do have something I want to share with you. I'd like to say that I believe ordination is a sacred and holy process. It begins with the recognition of a call on one's life, and it crests with the church community's affirmation of that call. Today, we are at the crest of that process. We are acknowledging that God's love and grace is guiding us and through certain duties and responsibilities. It's a formal consecration for the partnership or of the partnership between God, the one being ordained, and my church community. But I want to say again that I see this as our ordination. Because we are in community chaplaincy together. We are agreeing to engage in God's work of recreation and restoration as one. Today, our ordination, as we are called, midwives to the soul, to dig deeply within ourselves and give birth to something new here others can trust in, that their suffering will be tended with care. And lastly, I just want to say thank you. You have invited me into your shared identity here at Gahanna Community Congregational Church together, that you have trusted me and allowed me to trust you, that you encouraged me to participate and rewarded me with love and hugs and acceptance as I participate. Now, let's go do it all over again and again with those suffering outside our walls.
Amen. Thank you so much, Robin. And we'll transition now into our time of recognizing her in her ordination and committing her to further ministry with us together. I want to start by inviting Robin down, then also Brian and Donna, could you both come down initially too? We want to recognize the process that she's gone through and the people that have been especially important in bringing that along. Brian and Donna were part of the pastoral ministry team for the last few years and helped craft the process that would help fully affirm Robin's ministry with us and her continued development of those gifts and things. And so thank you so much for all of what both of you did and have been doing throughout that time, and I know we'll continue to do. You're great partners for me, and so it was exciting for me when Robin asked about being ordained to be able to bring her into your care and partnership as well. I'd also like to invite any members of the board from the last 2 years, actually, this year and also last year's, if you'd like to come forward, because you affirmed what that process was, checked in with Robin about it, read her reports and did things, and also are representing the church in us doing this ordination together as a community. So if, anyone who's participated in that, if you can come forward, please, as well. Bruce, are you able to come up? Or? Okay. We'll be patient for you. We really do appreciate all of the ways, again, that these folks that have been elected by all of you to represent the church on a number of things. I know that on a number of things, it's been busy with the AC and with other stuff. This is some of the good things, that the business of the church is important, but also here, let me get this out of the way. Yeah, thanks. And then also these types of ways that we are expanding who we are and who represents us in what ways is really exciting stuff to be able to do as a community as well. So I have a couple questions for everyone. We'll go through quickly. First, Robin, do you commit to continue to follow God's call on your life? Do you commit to not only be celebrating it and affirming it today, but to be continuing to develop it throughout your life of ministry?
With God's help, I do.
Do you commit to continuing to develop your bond with those here gathered, either in this room or virtually? And even more importantly, with your call as community and chaplain, do you commit to working with all of us to bring more sense of community and acceptance to those around us in following your call?
With God's help, I do.
All right. And also all of us, we have stuff to get to also. So I have questions for us to affirm as well. You can say similarly as Robin did, with God's help, that you do, if that sounds good. So do all of you commit to continuing to support and celebrate the call of God on Robin's life? Do you commit to continue to develop our community and to develop the ministry that we do, especially as guided by Robin? And do you commit as that community not only to develop our bonds together, but to develop the capacity to extend and invite those bonds to others as members of the community or as members of our extended family that we reach out to primarily as she leads us as a community chaplain? I want to give the opportunity to, if anyone would like to say something who has walked with Robin in this process, that you'd like to lift up something real quickly. We can get you a mic and you can lift that up. Yeah.
I think I'm really thankful for Robin, and I'm so glad you joined our church, and you're a blessing to us, and you make me want to be a better person.
Thank you, Katie. Anyone else like to? Yeah, Brian, thanks.
Well, I think I'm speaking for both Don and myself. We, throughout this journey, we've always found Robin to be very sincere, very committed, very prepared for what she wants to do and very focused. And I looked for something, you know, what do you say to someone that's going to be ordained? So I found a little something in Outreach Magazine. May you have courage to preach the word. May your family experience a healthy transition. May you model consistent, growing, godly living. May you understand the church and its members. May you have a quick connection with the church staff. May you have unique ability to remember names. May your family develop genuine friendships in the church. May you know God's vision for the future. May you have God's comfort and leading. And may you finish well each and every day.
Amen.
It's hard to follow that up. That was perfect, Brian. I just want to say that of all the churches in all of Ohio, God sent you to us. He knew you would fit in.
Yeah.
If I say any more, I'm going
to
cry.
That says something too, Bruce. You want to share?
I think it is wonderful that Robin can go into the community and bring God to people in nursing homes through prayer meetings and Bible study. So it is great that we are able to do that.
Thank you, everyone. I invite those of you sitting on the pews or even at home, if you can extend a hand as a gesture of showing your support and connection to God's blessing of Robin. And those here, I'm going to bring Robin up. If you'd like to come forward and either extend your hands or put a hand on Robin's shoulder as well, we'll pray a blessing on Robin and so we can be in God's presence together. Gracious Lord, today we thank you and celebrate the ways that you are moving both in our church family, in the community around us, and especially in the life of Robin and your call that has come forward on her life that we were able to come alongside of and see come to even further fruition in a way that has blessed and stretched us as you have blessed and stretched her. God, today we ask that your Spirit would come in a special way in honoring the call and that you have given, the work that you have started. And we ask that that Spirit would give extra empowerment, extra energy, extra sense of vision and purpose for Robin and for us as a community, that we do ministry together, caring for the community, caring for each other, learning how to be a place that creates space for more and more people, for more and more expressions, and then in so doing is a reflection of your kingdom. So God, as we ordain Robin's work, we ordain it for her, we ordain that we can be a participant in it, and we ordain that most of all that we are doing what you have shown us all church communities are supposed to do, and that you have given us this special expression and this special person to make it our own. May we continue to follow you and continue to work together as your Spirit comes. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you again so much. I'm going to give Robin, while she's here, an order.